So that's how you know how the Dharmashastra connects. So the whole first chapter will be establishing that. So this is very unique that the first verse of the Upanishad is establishing this. Right? It's natural that they're going to start with creation. There's some element of that and show the connection with what they're dealing. So this one, that. Then the Chandogya Upanishad 6.2.3. The Supreme Personality of Godhead thought, I am one, let me become many. I shall father many children. I think that's what you have, the Nityo Nityanam Chaitanas Chaitananam. In the Taittiriya Upanishad 3.1.1 it is said, the Supreme Absolute Truth is that from which everything is born. 3.1.1. You haven't done 3 yet. Bhriguvali. The Katha Upanishad 2.3.2.3, it is said, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is powerful like a thunderbolt. The entire world moves in fear of Him. They who know this become immortal. Out of fear of Him, the fire burns. Out of fear of Him, the sun shines. Out of fear of Him, Indra, Vayu, and Yama act. In Srimad Bhagavatam 3.25.42, the Supreme Personality of Godhead declares, it is because of my supremacy that the wind blows out of fear of me. The sun shines out of fear of me. And the Lord of clouds, Indra, sends forth showers out of fear of me. Fire burns out of fear of me. And death goes about taking its toll out of fear of me. Why would it have to be out of fear? Yes, yeah, because you have the element of that, you have the devotion and all that, but then sometimes you get caught up in their enjoyment and this and that, and so who wants to go to work if everything's going so nicely, right? So out of fear, then they're going to do everything, because if they don't do, because they're managing on his behalf, so it has to go that way, so if they don't do it, then there's going to be trouble for somebody, right? Srimad Bhagavatam 10.29.1. Sri Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, full of all opulences. Yet upon seeing those autumn nights scented with blossoming jasmine flowers, he turns his attention, his mind towards loving affairs. To fulfill his purposes, he employed his internal potencies. Right, now, why would we have come into this now? Right? We were just saying that He created everything, He's one, He's going to become many. Playfully, then He arranged all these different things. Out of fear, then everything is running because of Him. So now, why would this go?
Distinguishing the activities of the internal potency from the external?
Yes, you have internal and external, and you also have the element of that playfulness of the pastime. Like that. So there's going to be the element that he himself is independent, same time as the material world is there, he's not part of it, but he has his own pastimes. He's transcendental. Right. Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is said, the holy name of Lord Krishna is the sweetest of the sweet and the most auspicious of the auspicious. It is the ripened fruit of the vine of all the Vedas. It is conscious and spiritual. O best of the Bhrigu dynasty, chanted only once, either with faith or even with contempt and mockery, the holy name of Lord Krishna delivers the chanter. Right? So that's the thing, delivers means one is freed. So the point is the name, you know, just the liberation, because we'll say is one name can clear all the sin of the universe or liberate you, like that. So here is using the element of one can get liberated. But well, somebody says, oh, that's only a pure name or this or that. Why? Because we really give, liberation and sin a very big, chunk of our value system. Does that make sense? Otherwise, sin is illusion, and liberation without establishing oneself in, service to the Lord is also an illusion. They're mundane concepts. So why wouldn't one transcendental name in any form be able to clear all that? Does that make sense? So that's why he's saying it's not exaggeration, because we say one name can clear it all and all that, and then he say, no, but it's only if it's pure and this and that. What is that? What would that be? You're actually very subtly alluding that this is exaggeration, which is one of the ten offenses. The point is being made is all these points being made about the holy name are not exaggeration. They're actually like that. It's just so far beyond anything we've ever come in contact with before that to us it sounds like exaggeration. Does that make sense? Like that. Because we're trying to play down the potency or like that. So that means that's offense. You think it's exaggeration. It's not really like that. Krishna consciousness is the solution to all problems. Just chanting the holy name solves all problems. Well, that's there, but you know, you still have to, you know, find a job and take care of things. And but then you're saying is that the holy name isn't the solution to all problems. Right? You know, if we take yesterday's example of, okay, is there, we're taking the house as the attachment to the house. Then the attachment of the house, then let's say we look at it that the thing is we like, let's say, aesthetics, you know, nice things, things look nice, we like an aesthetic environment. So then, if that's the point, that's the element of Krishna that's actually attracting us about the house. So then, if aesthetics is the thing, then beauty is the first opulence of Krishna. So he's the most beautiful, most attractive, so and his environment that he is in is the most aesthetic. So then by absorbing ourselves in Krishna's and his pastimes in that, then there'll be the most, absorption in the aesthetics. Right? So then by chanting the name, we're in touch with Krishna, who is the most aesthetic. That makes sense? So our attachment to our house is solved by chanting the holy name. Right? So if we don't make that connection, with time it will happen. We won't know. But if you make the connection, it happens very fast. Does that make sense? Yes? So therefore, the process of chanting, the Sankirtan mission is the solution to all problems. Like that. So it's not just simplistic, it's real. You know, even mechanically, it's real. Does that make sense? So then to lower that would mean that you're not actually having that faith that it is. One can point out for someone who is understanding this very important element in a simplistic way. Okay, I just chant, no, I don't have to worry about anything. No, but you're supposed to wash the pots. No, why wash pots? I just chant. Then you have to point out that then in that chanting, Sankirtan means it's complete kirtan, so everything connected with that kirtan is also part of it. Yes?
I was just wondering, so if it's done with complete faith or more faith, then it goes faster?
Krishna points him when he's discussing with Nanda Baba, because he asked him why they're doing the Indra Yajna, and they didn't really know. So one of his points is something that you know about, you'll get more result than if you don't know. Does that make sense? So if you actually know about it, then the results come quicker, more intense and all that. So in other words, you're just chanting, you know, it's just something nice. You know, but if you understand it's Krishna's name, then the absorption is greater, so the benefit is more. So, but what we're saying here is that even the name being chanted in mock contempt or mockery, it delivers one. Right? Because the difference is that someone who's contempt or mockery, they may get delivered, but they don't get prema. But someone who's saying it with faith, They're moving towards prema. The other ones are just moving out of the material world. Happens to be in the same direction, so the holy name takes everybody that direction. Right? They situate you on the transcendental platform. But this person, having done that, then afterwards, even though they may be freed, But then because of their habit, they're used to dealing with material energy and trying to enjoy it. So immediately they'll get back into that. You know, because otherwise someone might say, well, if they're that, why do they continue the sinful activities? Because that's their, that is their, how do you say, habit. Right? Even on the liberated platform, if you want to be happy, you have to do something. So either you're doing devotional service or you'll come back to the material world. Right, so as they come back to the material world, they come back to what is the freshness in their mind. That would be what they were doing 1 second before they chanted the holy name. You know, and so then again they'll take up. That makes sense? Yeah. Srila Sukadeva Goswami tells Maharaj Parikit, Srimad Bhagavatam 12:3-14. Almighty Parikit, I have related to you the narration of all these great kings who spread their fame throughout the world and then departed. My real purpose was to teach transcendental knowledge and renunciation. Stories of kings lent power and opulence to these narrations, but do not in themselves constitute the ultimate aspect of knowledge. Right? So here now we're showing the difference, how simultaneously one in difference. So the material world has been created. He expands himself, he creates the place. Out of his playfulness, then we see that it means everybody's according out of fear of him is acting, right? Not that he's afraid of them or needs that fear, that's the only way they work, right? Then he himself, through his internal potency, performs his pastimes here. So not only are the material pastimes going on, but then his spiritual pastimes are going on. And somebody, by being absorbed in these, then they make advancement, they develop. Then from this is that, now he's showing is that he has been teaching transcendental knowledge and detachment from the material nature. So in other words, attachment to Krishna, detachment from the material nature, but he's done it through the medium of the kings. Right? So this is the secret. Is that whatever you're doing, you're trying to develop your understanding of Krishna detachment from the world, but you're using whatever is interesting, right? Why use kings, right? Now, what if we went through the whole, all the dynasty of, you know, Panwallas outside the front gate from time immemorial, you know, and there and then there was, you know, Mahatambula, you know, and he used to make, you know, a very nice tambula that, you know, the old lady down the street, you know, told him this was the best tambula she's had in the last 57 years, you know. And then his son, you know, Anu Tambula, then, you know what I'm saying? Would we be sitting with rapt attention, you know? You know, people are, you know, fainting out of amazement of the taste or just how, you know, deft he was at putting the, you know, the different things on the palm leaf and folding it up, you know, and all that, and like that. Or he had the biggest palm leaves anybody's ever seen. You know, the palms were so big, you had to fold them in half to stick it in your mouth, you know, or something. Or would you be interested? Not really. Okay, what about the ice cream walla, maybe? You know, would that be more interesting? Maybe. The guy selling Nike shoes? Yves Saint Laurent? Versace? Okay, so when we get up to kings, then it starts to become interesting. Because Rupa Goswami says if you're going to write dramas, and that your themes that you should pick should either be chivalry or conjugal, you know? And when you deal with kings, you get both, right? So that's always going to be interesting to the widest crowd, right? Because whenever there's chivalry, when there's fighting, when there's all these kind of elements, then immediately everyone's attention is there, right? Same when there's the conjugal relation, then everybody wakes up, right? So that kind of aspect is there. So then here we see is that he uses the stories of kings. It lends what he said here. Power and opulence, right? Because people like that. What's power? Control. What's opulence? Enjoy. Control and enjoy. Got it? So that then makes it that we're interested. So the same way as this is your top level of that. Now you bring that down into your home, it may not be as powerful and as opulent, but it's still in the same category. Does that make sense? You're still dealing with that control and enjoyment. It's just, you know, on our level. You know. Then we get down to the pond water and stuff like that. Yeah. In the Gopal Tapiri Upanishad, it is said, whether visible or invisible in this world, my form always stays in my own abode. This form is also present as the deity of ignorance, the deity of passion, and the deity of goodness. My human-like form, which is eternal and full of transcendental knowledge and bliss, is present when my devotees serve me with devotion. Okay. So now we see here, now he's pointing out, visible or invisible in this world, that means both are there. So the form and the formless are both there in the material world. Right? So, but whether it's manifest, whether he's manifest or not here, he's always in his eternal abode. Right? It's not that when he's here, nobody's at home, right? You know, yeah, when you come up to the gates of Vaikuntha and says, you know, out to lunch in the material world, right? You know, something like that. So then, right, isn't it? Most people here are considered out to lunch. No? So like that. So then he's in both at once. Does that make sense? Yeah? Okay, thank you. Now, he also comes as all these different personalities here, right? So you know, Lord Vishnu, Lord Shiva, and Brahma. Then he's also expanded as them, right? And then, but his human-like form, that'll only be manifest if there's devotion, right? So these other things, other three you can see, if you have the particular material qualification that's necessary, the particular austerity or other things like this, right? But to be able to see, just like the yogis, they may be able to see Paramatma in the heart, right? Because they perform the particular austerity and focusing on the Lord, but there's no devotion as such, you know, at this point, right? But having seen the Lord, they take that up. Then they actually are able to appreciate the human-like form, because otherwise they're seeing God. You understand? Paramatma is God, like that. So the human-like form, that means that's only with devotion. Right? Arjuna, he saw God, he saw the universal form, so he saw the form and the formless, but it was not interesting, so he wanted to see, you know, the human-like form, right? Because he also saw four-armed form, well, because the human-like form, that's where the devotion and all those things are the most sweet, right? So now he's shown all these different things. Do we see how these verses are moving? Because that's the whole idea, is that all these verses, you say, well, what do they got to do with each other? That's the whole point. You have to find out. You know what I'm saying? You have to use the intelligence to see that. So if you see it naturally, great. If you don't, then you have to contemplate. What is the common point? The common point then is that is the sutra, where he says, although he is transcendental, the playful Lord creates the material universes filled with conscious beings and inert matter, right? So all those verses establish his point. So you can see here is then the playful Lord is a matter of what kind of beings. So there are conscious beings, there are the material beings, and then there are the spiritual beings, right? In his playfulness, he's have the material creation, but at the same time he's performing his eternal pastime, right? So now Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport to Mantra 13, Lord Krishna is the original personality of Godhead, and everything that exists has emanated from him. In the Bhagavad Gita 10.8, the Lord says, I am the source of all spiritual and material worlds. Everything emanates from me. The wise who perfectly know this engage in my devotional service and worship me with all their hearts. Here is a correct description of the Supreme Lord, given by the Lord himself. The word sarvasya prabhava indicate that Krishna is the creator of everyone, including Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. And because these principal deities of the material world are created by the Lord is the creator of all that exists in the material and spiritual worlds. Thus, all Vedic literature confirms that Narayana, or Krishna, is the cause of all causes. In the Brahma Samhita 5.1, also it is said that the Supreme Lord is Sri Krishna, Govinda, the delighter of every living being, and the primeval cause of all causes. The really learned persons know this from evidence given by the great sages and the Vedas, and thus they decide to worship Lord Krishna as all in all. Such persons are called Buddha, or really learned, because they worship only Krishna. Right? So that means then there's devotion. So because it's the Upanishadic formula, then he's keeping it within that context. But the point to what he's making, you can understand that means that devotion is there, the elements of service to him in his human form, his pastimes in Braja, all that are included. Does that make sense? You understand how the Upanishads are working? Krishna is performing wonderful sweet, wonderful pastimes with his intimate associates, right? The Supreme Lord, the creator of all, through his divine will is interacting, is interacting in pastimes with his internal potency. Right? Is there a difference between the two? Technically? No, it's the same topic. But one is then in the form of like Kavya, and the other is in the form of the Upanishads. Does that make sense? This is how we have to be able to see. Otherwise, we will take it that it's all different things, different kinds of shastras. It'll be our vision will be, our intelligence will be the mode of passion. Right? Because mode of passion means you think there's a difference between them. Mode of goodness means you understand it's the same. All the Vedic literatures are saying the same thing, just they're saying it through different mediums. Right? Just like all the souls are the same, their constitutional position is the same, but due to conditioning, they appear different, therefore they'll speak different, act different. Does that make sense? So to address that conditioned nature of the living entities, like that, the Vedic literatures had all these different varieties of ways of presentation. Though they're presenting only the one absolute truth. Does that make sense? Yes?
Would you be able to just give a quick summary about the Brahmins, Upanishads? What is that different aspect that each different part of the scripture gives?
Well, Puranas means like here, he's saying that it'll be on stories that will attract the attention. So generally it's always about kings and the dynasties, because as a rule you have to have the lineage of the sun and moon dynasties. You can have more than that, but that has to be the basis. So we see the Bhagavatam and all the Vedic, all the Puranas are always working on that. Then if they want to not necessarily the whole line, they'll just focus on one king. Right? So then you get Ramayana, Mahabharata, then it's on one person. So that's because that will attract the attention. It's happening, it's something that you can apply in your life, it's about somebody's life, so it's interesting. The Upanishads will be taking from the intellectual platform. How you're going to use your intellect to understand Krishna consciousness. So everything will be in that kind of language. Does that make sense? Like that. Yeah, it means then your Sanskrit will be how to communicate what you want to say. Depending upon what you want to say, you will use particular words, put them in particular context. But it's basically on what you need to communicate, that is therefore then what the language can do. So that means all the human needs and emotions, and everything about them, the situations they're in, the understandings within that, their identities within that, their relationships within that, their attractions and desires within that, the activities they perform, and the results and experiences they get, all that has to be explained. So Sanskrit is then able to perfectly deal with that. So it is the science of communication. So then all of human needs can be understood by understanding grammar. Right? Generally we take it that grammar is this boring, dry thing, and then there's the literature. But actually, the grammar contains everything that literature needs to be able to express itself. Does that make sense? Then you have ritual. It has to be able to be... It means human life has to have some kind of form. There must be some kind of observable religious activity that you can express your desire for elevation and through, right? Because this will be done in connection with other living entities. Does this make sense? So that form of ritual, then whatever is the perfect for a human being to elevate themselves, then that's given as a kulta. Right? Now, to be able to perform that, you have to do it at the correct time. Right? Because time, place, and circumstance, you don't, it means in a relationship, if you don't understand the time, place, and circumstance, you haven't understood the relationship. You will fail in that relationship. You know, or at least at that moment that you've failed this. So it won't work. So you have to, because the whole point is that if you're dealing with the Lord and His creation, then whatever, and creation is unlimited and He's unlimited, so you have to match it. So that's your time, place, and circumstance. Right? Without considering that, what is the connection? Does that make sense? He's unlimited. His potency is unlimited. So at any one point, it means the creator and the created, what is the particular mood or situation that they are situating themselves in is going to be different. So that means you have to see the time, place, and circumstance to see what's the commonality so that there is relationship. You know what I'm saying? Otherwise, this idea, I just do whatever I want and everyone's got to work around that, can't work, because that means you're saying, I'm not going to consider time, place, and circumstance, but everybody else has to. Right? But if I don't consider it and no one else considers it, then is it relationship? No, there's no connection at all. So even this idea is that we say, I don't believe in all this. I'm just practical. I just speak what I want. I just, you know, straightforward. None of this, you know, nonsense and all that. Like that. But then that means everybody else has to adjust to you. So indirectly, you're recognizing the actual fact of how relationships work. But you're not about to cooperate with it. So your independence means I'm independent of relationships. So if you're independent of relationships, that means you have to be Atmarama. So that means you go to the forest, sit down, and absorb yourself in some variety of meditation or austerity that you don't need anybody else to be involved with. That would be then the real perfection of this attitude. Right? But they want to have attitude and be the enjoyer. They don't go together. To be the enjoyer, time, place, and circumstance, relationship. You don't want to be the enjoyer, just the controller. Then go out and sit down on your own and control your life, control yourself. But you want to control everybody else, but not be, you know, interested in the time, place, and circumstance. And they have to be interested in that. Well, that means, what does that mean? Yeah, you're the master, everybody else is servant. It doesn't work. It's not working for anybody. It's just not. Like that. No one is successful at this. Like that. Temporarily, seemingly. But how many points are there? You know, the old geezers sit around in their rocking chairs on the front porch. What are they talking about? Something that was meant something in their life that went well, that impressed them. And how many years ago are they relating to? Yes, back in the Great War, you know, like that, you know, like, you know. So it's like, how many years ago is that? You know what I'm saying? So there's always something going on in the mind, but how often are those points that it's dealing with? So that's the whole idea, is that, therefore, is if you're not dealing with the time, place, and circumstance, those points aren't there. You'll notice that why those points are that you're dealing with time, place, and circumstance, right? You've just been dropped out of a rattly, you know, flying contraption over, you know, the coast of France, and all the little guys down there that like their sour cabbage are shooting, you know, bullets and missiles at you. You are in the moment. There's no question of not being. That's why it sticks in their mind. Does that make sense? That's the only reason. That's why 60 years later, they're still talking about it. Like that. Does that make sense? You know? So all these things, that's what catches it. So anything that catches attention that you're in the moment, that, you know, the show's going on, you're watching that, you're, you know, this, you know, going and getting something to eat and this and that. But then they have a chase scene or something else, and then you're right there. And then after the movie, how was, oh yeah, great chase scene. Why? Because you were in the moment. So anything that makes you in the moment, that you're actually aware, that sticks in your mind. Right? Why? Because that's the mode of goodness. So the mind and the mode of goodness kind of go together. Does that make sense? So that's why you have to have, therefore, muhurta. So your whole astrology, astronomy, which is based on the time, and knowing according to time what's the proper thing or what's the result, then that must be established. Does that make sense? Of course, devotees, we chant, we don't care for these things. You know, they care for everything else, but not about that. Okay, then you're going to have the philosophy. Without knowing that, that's the basis of everything, because that's actually what establishes what's going on. And everything else is then the presentation for the conditioned nature. Though it is reflected from, or it's coming from the eternal, original culture, and so then in that culture, then all these aspects are there as means of expression of devotion. But here, because there's not devotion, it's basically expression of need and desire of, you know, wanting to get something, accomplish something, and try to get some taste from it. Right? Puranas, then we've discussed. There also is then the arts that comes into the Puranic. You need the arts for human, the refinement of human life, all the different ways you're going to deal and interact. Then you're going to have the Dharma Shastri. It means you have to have actually what's your duties and that you must do, otherwise everyone's going to do whatever they like. And without that, there's no organization, so there is no human experience. There is no development, no upliftment. You can't discuss the arts. You can't have, you know, all these different economics and other things like this. You can't have sense gratification. Right? So therefore, Dharma must be there. And then and the Upanishads then is the final of the four. And then there must be logic. There must be some rational way to express something. So the Sanskrit, the language will give you the vocabulary to express, and logic will give you the form to how you'll express it. Does that make sense? Okay. Happy? Something was left out? We left out the upakaranas. So therefore, it means how are you going to be Krishna conscious and progress in life if there's no health? So that health has to be, you know, physical, you know, mental, intellectual. So then Ayurveda will describe that. Then in the refinement and all that, you have music, drama, and dance, right? So the arts will express that, but there has to be a science behind them. Otherwise, how are they going to be able to communicate, you know, the human need, like Sanskrit? So they're another means of communication, right? Then you're going to have to live in a place and live with others in a place. So therefore, you have to have a house and all that. So your vastu, your stapana shastra, sula shastras, all that are done. And then, because there may be a difference of opinion on how things are organized, therefore you have the dhanavada for, you know, dealing with the martial side of things in case it's necessary. Fourteen. Yeah, we just did that. Like that. I mentioned the Gita, the 14 branches of Vedic knowledge. Yeah, Chaturdasa Vidya. That's what it's called. Is that okay? Like that. In other words, you have the four Vedas, then you have the six, six. Vedangas, yes. So that would be four of them would be Sanskrit, then the ritual, and astronomy, Jyotish. So you have Siksha, the proper pronunciation, Chanda, your poetics, or meter, who's not in the poetics meter, Vyakaran grammar, and Nirupta vocabulary, right? Your kalpa, your ritual, then Jyotish, which will establish the proper times, then your Paravidya, or for us, then Vedanta. Mimamsa is how you view it. Technically, it's supposed to be transcendental, though there are the other six schools don't necessarily look at it that way. And so you have to have a philosophy or a way to interpret or understand the Veda. Then you have the Purana, the history of how those who have practiced Vedic culture, how they've lived it, how they've perfected their lives. Then you have to have the Dharma Shastra, which establishes, so Dharma, Artha, Niti, all this, then how you establish what is the proper way of human beings to behave. And then the Nyaya Shastra's logic. Does that make sense?
Where does Upanishad
fit? That's within the Veda, because the Veda themselves have four parts. So you have the Veda with the Samhita, which is the verses, the Brahmanas, how they're explained to use in ritual, for the Kalpa. The Aranyakas that explain the metaphysics, much of what we're talking about here, like that. Notice the forest environment, so it fits. And then the Upanishads is then the philosophy. Right? So in other words, you have the Veda itself, the Samhita, which the verses deal with everything. Then you're going to have the external, the ritual, you're going to have the internal, the philosophy, and then you're going to have the metaphysics that connect the two. Does that make sense? So you get all three based on the Samhita. Is that okay? Something else? Okay. So so now in the next sutra, the author refutes, quite, he doesn't have to. Now he moves on, because that's actually an explanation of doubts coming from before, of just the Lord and his potencies, that he's here, but he's not, that he's different, that he's not. So now, having done that, now one may get the idea, okay, well then there's the Lord, then there's his potencies, and then he moves back and forth and like this. But there's a difference between him and his potencies. So now the next idea that comes up is that that there is a difference. In the next sutra, the author refutes the idea that the transcendental potency is different from the Lord himself. Right? Because this is very important, because we can make many mistakes by separating the Lord from his potency. Like that. It means we can distinguish differences, but it doesn't mean that there's a difference. Right? In the Khichdi, you can still identify this is rice, this is dal, this is a potato, this is a chili, this is a bay leaf, right? But at the same time, it's just Khichdi. So if you separate it too much, then it's not Khichdi anymore. You understand? So you can identify and tell the difference so that the whole thing works, but not to the point where you can't. It doesn't function anymore. Does that make sense? Yeah? Sutra 7. If someone claims, quote, the Lord is different from his potency, then I reply, no, it is not so, for they are not different. No, the transcendental is non-different. The material is separated. Right? Like that. But at the same time, it's still a non-difference. But the point is what we're working with is the element that is, how you say, that is closer. It means the material element themselves, then there is that difference. It's been separated. But at the same time, as it functions based on his potency. You know what I'm saying? Without that empowerment of his potency, without him entering it through his potency, like that. So that element, then there's the aspect is non-different, but at the same time, there's a difference. It's non-different, but there is difference within. You know what I'm saying? How would you say? There is, how would you say? means all the elements of the Khichdri are non-different. It's all Khichdri. But at the same time, they're non-different but distinguishable. You know? That would be the point. Is that okay? So, because for us, the dead matter isn't actually the problem. It is the problem because we think it's something important. But it's the lack of distinguishing how Krishna has entered the creation that is the illusion. Dead matter is dead matter. We say this is a rock. That's not the problem. But the point is what makes it a rock? What is its rockness? What gives it that potency to manifest rockness? That's the illusion, is that we're not seeing that. They're saying the big deal is not this is a brick and that's a blanket. You know, the problem is that what makes the brick a brick and what makes the blanket a blanket? Rather than, oh, well, this is made out of wool, that's made out of mud. No, that's not fair. You know, because we can make a brick out of straw. Like that. People make hay bale houses. You know, just the bricks are a little bit bigger than these bricks. You know? And that, does that make sense? So it's, but it's doing the same thing. In other words, you could say, but still it's not a brick. No, but, you know, if it's made out of stone, it's a block. If it's made out of hay, it's a bale. If it's made out of earth, it's a brick. But it still can be put together for building, construction. And they both all have the same potency. Just some have more. The stone has more than the brick, which has more than the bale. Right? But it's still the same point of that strength. So the bales, you know, in a very thick wall can hold up a small house. Right? The bricks with a thinner wall can hold up, you know, something bigger. And then the stone blocks can make very massive things. So, but the potency is the same. Just the manifestation is different. Therefore, the time application of time, place, and circumstance on that, then they can be used differently. Otherwise, if you don't see that, then, you know, if you try to use a bale to do something that a block should do, you know, or a block that a brick would do, it would be a bit of a problem. You know, so you have to be able to see that. So that's where the whole culture comes in. So being aware, being conscious, only if you're conscious, then you can deal with time, place, and circumstance. If you're conscious, then you can be Krishna conscious. If you're not conscious, then what is the meaning? The International Society for Krishna. Right? That's where we have to end, but it's consciousness. So the point is that because we're conscious, we can be conscious of Krishna. You know what I'm saying? That's the element. So the brick has the ability to be able to deal with that particular potency or accept that potency. Right? So if you're conscious, then Krishna can enter that consciousness. You're not conscious, how is Krishna going to enter? Right? So if the brick is not manifesting its, you know, how you say, that particular qualities required, how will the potency of brickness enter it? You know what I'm saying? If I go to the brick field, they already have the mud they, you know, put into the form and put on the ground and let dry. And so it's the shape of the brick, it has everything, you know, the color's a little different. But it still doesn't really, it can to a limited degree be used for construction. So you could still put those together and mud them up and make a very thick wall, and, you know, it would work. But not as much as if they fire the brick. So when they fire the brick, then more of that element of the brickness enters. Does that make sense? Like that. Is that? Does that work? Okay. So then, Thakur then says, if someone claims that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the creator of the worlds, is different from his potency, then this sutra is spoken to refute him, because the Supreme Personality of Godhead is not different from his many potencies. The potencies are not different from him. This is described in the following words of the Nyaya Shastra. Right? So now here he's putting it in the beginning of this one instead of putting this at the end. Because the other ones, there's more of a direct connection. Right? In other words, it's one topic with many different points within it. Does that make sense? Well, this is basically another topic, because your chinta beta beta tattva, the oneness and difference is that is technically different. Because the other one is, he's entered everything, but he's different. Right? That's what you're trying to prove. But now you're trying to point out is that he's non-different. You know? So that's the simultaneously one and different. So it's two different main points. Does that make sense? Within that. So you have a main theme that is there, and then within. So these are within these 10 verses. Then we can see it can be divided up into different categories. One, we were establishing he's the supreme potent, right? And that he's entered everything, but at the same time he's different. So now we're showing the oneness and difference, that they're simultaneous. He's not actually different. Okay. And then Nyaya Shastra, the supreme personality of Godhead, the master of all potencies, is not different from his potencies. In the Svaita Suvatara Upanishad 6.8, it is said, the Lord's potencies of knowledge, power, and action share his own nature. They are non-different from him. Okay. So that is also, you could say, is the chit potency, right? Because knowledge and action like that, then that is what the chit potency is doing. So that's why you can refer to the Sarup Shakti as the chit Shakti. You're not talking about chit meaning in Sat Chit Ananda, you're saying chit meaning the overall. Like that, can be spoken. Yes.
I remember that you said that the difference between the world and his form is the tattva, and the difference between him and his energies is the person.
Difference between the Lord and his form.
Sorry.
There is no difference.
No. The difference between himself and his energies is the rasa, where the rasa comes from.
Ah, it means you could use it that way.
That's what you said.
No, but that would be in a particular context. You know what I'm saying?
Relate to this discussion?
Yes, but now before was more on the element of the tattva. That we're describing, that there's the Lord, there's the form, there's the formless, like that. Same way as they're non-different. But now he's going into the Lord and his energies. Now you're bringing out the personal side, and then there's the non-difference from the rasa side. So we're getting both the tattva and the rasa, because you have to have them both established. Otherwise, then there won't be the proper. They won't actually be dealing properly with the Lord, because for the Lord, the tattva is discussed simply because we don't appreciate or understand rasa in its proper form. When one appreciates transcendental rasa, then the tattva is not necessary for you. The tattva is used by those who understand the proper rasa to explain to those who don't understand it. So the first point is, like, in rasa, who's God? Right? Who's the enjoyer? So that's kind of where you start. You know. So then that becomes established. Does that make sense? Okay, so, and we'll continue with this tomorrow. Okay. Do you understand what we're doing here? We just switched something from the book. Is that before we were showing, okay, here's the sutra, we're using, you know, the quote from the Upanishad, Prabhupada's purports is the first thing to substantiate it. Then all the other points would be behind it. But since I just was thinking that since this is a study of Prabhupada's Ishupanishad, it should be that the point, the sutra and its points are discussed so that one understands actually what the sutra is made. Then you show how Prabhupada's purport's already saying that. You understand? Then you can work back from it. Otherwise you've heard that, then you heard all these other things, they're new. And this kind of Prabhupada says this, Bhaktivinoda Thakur. No, it's you're saying is that, no, Prabhupada's already saying what Bhaktivinoda Thakur said. Just, all those points are there, but then you understand how that language works. Because otherwise, Prabhupada's used this very simple language that anybody has access to, but the import of it is very deep. It's not simple language as such, or simplistic language. It's very complex, deep, absolute truth is being presented through the medium of simple presentation. But it's by no means its meaning is simple. Right? It's direct, it's straightforward, but it has all these other, how you say, aspects or, you know, hues or, you know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Yeah? Okay. Did we ever say Hare Krishna? No. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki, Jainitai Gaura Premanandi.